And we are back, ready to attack segment number two. Hope you're having a good holiday weekend. Hope your bellies are full and your fireplaces are roaring. Thanks again for spending some of your morning with us, however. My name is Glenn Wessel. I'm here with Alice Wessel, and we've been discussing a little bit about trust-preferred securities and some of the risks that an investor ought to pay attention to before he or she takes a stake in such a security. Just prior to the break, I mentioned that trust-preferred securities have the ability for the issuer to stop paying the dividends for 5 years or sometimes longer. And the reason it's structured like that is because when the bank can say, well, we don't have to pay you any dividends or interest, it counts as capital for the bank, which is what the bank is looking for. The bank is looking to augment its capital position. So there are certain provisions that it can invoke that work against the investor. So remember, in finance, there's no free lunch. And if you're looking at a high yield or anything that looks particularly attractive, you must automatically know that there has to be some downside that comes along with it. And it's your job to weigh the upsides and the downsides to figure out to what extent it may favor you taking a position in it or not. If the bank or the bank holding company does decide to defer or to forego paying those dividend payments to you, you can take some comfort in knowing that it, under most conditions anyway that I have ever seen, it must eventually pay it to you. So it keeps accruing in your favor, even though you're not receiving it. And then at some point, if the bank survives, okay, that's a big point right there. If the bank survives, then it would then have to pay those dividends to you in arrears. But that's just a radio guy saying that. That doesn't carry any weight when you're looking at any particular trust-preferred security. The real place to find that out is in the offering document or the prospectus. So I would read at least part of that document before I would take a position in any trust preferred to understand what provisions are there. All right. So from the investor's point of view, what's good about a trust preferred security? The high yields. So John was mentioning that he can get almost 9% on some trust preferred security, which sounds about right. And that is, 2, 3, 4 times as much as a treasury security pays. So it is attractive from that standpoint, no doubt about it. So let's take a look at some of the negatives, some of the other negatives that would exist. Trust-preferred securities, by regulation, have to be extremely long-term securities. It's not uncommon to see them maturing 30, 40, 50 years from now. Some of them are perpetual. They never mature. It's a long-term instrument. Because it's long-term, it's going to have what we call interest rate risk to an extreme measure. For small changes in the general level of interest rates, the prices of trust-preferred securities are going to vary tremendously. So if interest rates rise, you can expect the market value of your trust-preferred security to decline precipitously, and vice versa. When interest rates go down, trust-preferred securities will tend to rise in value. The super long maturities that are associated with these trust preferreds means that the investor incurs what might be characterized as cumulative credit risk. So while there may be a remote chance of the bank holding company going out of business or having a financial hiccup in any given quarter or year, that probability accumulates over time. So who would have thought that Merrill Lynch would have had problems? Who would have thought Washington Mutual would have had problems? Who would have thought Lehman Brothers would have gone bankrupt? These firms have been around for many, many years, sometimes over 100 years. The fact is that as the years go by, there's a cumulative risk that something bad will happen. And it's very difficult to know ahead of time. So when you're dealing with a security that doesn't mature for 30 or 60 years or that never matures, you have to understand that if that institution is marked down in terms of its creditworthiness, it's going to have a dramatic impact on the price of the security. Let's see if there's anything else that I left out here. I think that pretty much covers it for trust-preferred securities. Hate to beat a dead horse too much, but I think that's it. So when you're looking at these instruments, just know that we use them. Lots of institutional investors invest in trust-preferred securities, but you have to weigh the good and the bad to try to make sure that it's the correct thing for you. And then the other thing that I would add to that is that it would probably make sense not to put a tremendous amount of your portfolio in trust-preferred securities in general. You know, maybe relegate it to a relatively small percentage of your portfolio. So what else do you have for us today, Alice?
Well, we have another listener, Stan, who's also written in about seeking high yields through royalty trust. He writes, "Dear Glenn, as a 74-year-old widower, I need additional income to make ends meet. I've been looking at royalty trusts because of their attractive yields. For instance, the Marine Petroleum Trust has a dividend yield of over 8.6%. What do you think of royalty trust in general?"
Royalty trusts. Okay, that's a kind of a strange animal. First of all, what is a royalty? A royalty is some amount of money that is paid to some other entity based on some productive asset. So let's say you write a book and you sell the book, you'll get royalties from the book. So that would be a royalty book. A royalty trust, on the other hand, is an entity that typically will invest investor assets in some type of natural resource, whether it be oil or gas or natural gas, petroleum, oil shale, something that's in the ground, mineral rights, coal, anything that has to do with a natural resource is fair game for a royalty trust. Most royalty trusts are based in either the United States or Canada, and I think there might be a royalty trust in Russia, but the United States and Canada are the two countries that are primarily associated with issuing providing harbor to royalty trusts. Royalty trusts, real quickly, are taxed in a beneficial way. So kind of like a mutual fund, where if the mutual fund distributes most of its profits to its investors at least once per year, the mutual fund then does not have to pay taxes at the corporate level. And royalty trusts are set up the same way. They don't pay taxes at the corporate level. They pass their profits through to their investors. So we'll discuss this a little bit more when we return. My name is Glenn Wessel. By the way, if you'd like to have a free portfolio analysis or have us do some quick modeling of your financial situation, give us a call at 232-2000. We'll be glad to try to help you out. We'll be back in just a moment.